I'm Mike Gillis.
And I'm Casey Doran. And this is Radio versus the Martians.
I have been stewing on something, Casey, and it's something I've wanted to talk about for a while. Like, I remember there's a line in the movie Rocky Balboa. Did you ever see that movie?
Mm-hmm. Oh, no, wait. Well, that was the one that he did around the time of John Rambo, right?
Yeah, this is like in 2006. It's like basically Rocky VI.
Early 60s Sylvester Stallone comes back to do his iconic character.
Yeah.
I did not see that one.
And Step Into the Ring, not like he's like... He's like the new Mickey in Creed.
Right.
But he's not like a trainer. He's actually going into the ring and fighting at like age 60.
Basically the least believable Rambo movie.
the thing I like about it, though, with Rocky Balboa is that it actually is probably the best Rocky movie since the original.
Interesting.
That there's a point where they became sort of Mike Tyson's Punch-Out over time, that it's about Rocky having to find the special trick that he needs to beat somebody. But this one had a lot of heart, and it does the thing. It steers into his age. It steers into the fact that he's old, and like early on in the fight, the young guy, the 20-something guy, the champ, breaks one of his hands, and that's the only reason the fight goes as long as it does. And it becomes about this champ who's never fought anyone for real, having to overcome pain in a way that he hasn't before, and becoming a real champion where he's just been wiping people out. And there's this publicity thing of them going, oh, in this computer simulation, it says you could never beat Rocky Balboa in his prime. And the thing that Rocky has, the reason he gets into this fight, this is kind of the point I'm making, is that Rocky says he still has some stuff in the basement. That there's this stuff there that he just needs to get out of his system, because if he leaves it there, it'll fester. And he just wants to get all of this out in one fight and then walk away with no regrets.
So I'm sensing a pattern here. You, Mike, have things in your basement, so you decided to come over to my basement.
Yes.
So you can get things out of your basement.
I'm going to offload them into your basement.
That's what basements are for.
That's what being a mooch is for.
Yes.
So
what is in your basement, Mike?
I have, for the last few months, really gotten tired. I don't know if the audience is tired of this, too, but I really hate one of the crutches that we have in conversations, because it's like this gravity well that pulls us into talking about Zack Snyder and superhero movies and the Marvel Cinematic Universe.
Yeah.
That in the last few Fun Size episodes, I've actively been editing that part of the conversation out.
And I didn't know this, even re-listening to them, that you had... And I was in the room.
Yeah. So I think I've gotten
And the
pretty,
audience was none the wiser.
I really don't want to talk about this. And I think that there's that... It's like when you play the game Gauntlet, and there's that pile of bones that ghosts keep coming out of.
Yeah.
And you got to destroy that pile of bones. That's Rocky's basement right there. You got to get it all out.
Otherwise, now you're using a metaphor I can comprehend.
Yes. It's the antibiotics method of getting rid of something. You got to take the whole dose.
Sure.
And I've felt this way about this for probably about a year. And I don't know. Every time I go, oh, God, we're talking about this again, and we fall into it over and over again, it's like we have a fucking problem. I just think, like, is this the point at which somebody turns the episode off and goes, I'm sick of hearing these guys bitch about Marvel, and I'm sick of hearing these guys bitch about Zack Snyder? And I was thinking that I've had this constantly evolving feeling about these superhero movies, and I want to get all of that out of this out of the basement into this conversation.
Okay.
And
I'm here for you, Mike. Let's do it.
Oh, thank you.
Let's do it.
So
they're all good.
End of story.
Pre-order the tickets every single time they come out.
Buy them on Blu-ray.
Yes.
No, that's actually not my point, believe it or not. I have loved superheroes my whole life. That it's always been the one thing that kind of is always there in the background. I think my real love is of the comic book medium, but superheroes have always been a big part of that. They're what got me into loving comic books. So I was thrilled in, you know, the early aughts, late 90s, when we started to see these things get made in a serious way. But for the longest time, for my childhood, there were really only two superheroes could get into movies, and that was Superman and Batman. And Superman was the only one that really had a real budget, because, of course, that was the difference between Marvel and DC back in the day, which is that that Marvel was a bit more homespun, and when their stuff got adapted to live action, it was always kind of cheap looking.
Yeah.
It never looked as good as the, like, it didn't have Warner Brothers money behind it.
All I need to say is my third favorite Swedish actor, Dolph Lundgren. As the Punisher.
Enough said. There was a bunch of Reb Brown, you know, the guy from Space Mutiny, played Captain America on television a few times. There was a TV movie with about Doctor Strange back in the day. I think
Jeffrey Combs.
It aired opposite an episode of Roots, so that's probably how well it
did. Wait. Wasn't it the Mystery, and it was starring Jeffrey Combs?
No. Doctor Strange? That would have been better. This TV movie, I think Jessica Walter from Arrested Development and Archer plays his villain in that movie.
Interesting.
Which that's a major point in its favor, but the movie's still awful. I mean, there's a lot of good people in bad movies. So anyways, there was a sense of this stuff is cheap and it'll never be made. So it wasn't like I waited my whole life to see this stuff on the big screen. I'd seen it and it looked cheap. So I was like, okay, I'm sticking to comic books. And then like the Batman movies came out. And again, still Superman and Batman get money. You know, the Captain America movie starring J.D. Salinger's son is cheap as shit. Yeah. I mean, the Marvel ones always look cheap. They always look bad. I know there was going to be a Spider-Man movie in the 80s made by Canon Films.
Oh!
Which would have probably had a certain amount of charm to it. But again, it's a Canon Films movie. So you would have gotten... It would have been fun trash.
Yeah.
In the same way that, like, the Masters of the Universe movie is fun trash. By the way, that's the movie that tanked Canon so that we didn't get the Spider-Man movie.
I'm not surprised.
So, I mean, it would have
been
fun.
Dodged a bullet, I guess.
Here's the thing. The older I get, the more I'm more interested in seeing a Canon film Spider-Man movie than a well-made Spider-Man movie.
Sure.
It's the same thing I kind of got while watching the Highlander movies, is that you have the ones that take it seriously and want to try to be true to something, and the only one that passed the first one that has any interest for me is the second one, because at least it's interesting in a Gremlins 2, Bill and Ted's Bogus Journey kind of way. So the thing that I got is that I've been desensitized to superhero movies being made well. And I don't get excited anymore that I live in a world where I've seen, like, the Vision and the Falcon and Groot. And, I mean, think of your C&D list characters that you never would have assumed being put on the big screen. Put them on the big screen well. And it feels like we've already entered an age where, and this is something we've complained about more, that it's feeling less and less like a piece of art being made with the fingerprints of the artist on it. And more of a corporate product where it's all about tying into the next thing and tying into the next moment, building Easter eggs for another thing. And it feels like it's all build up and less payoff. And I mean, I look at even the earlier parts of this, like you watch Batman Returns and you're not going to question, like, who directed this movie again?
Batman Returns?
Oh, yeah.
Tim Burton.
It's one of the most Tim Burton-y things up there. It's up with Edward Scissorhands and with Beetlejuice. Yeah. And it's so Tim Burton. It's aggressively Tim Burton. But it feels like something that was made by an artist. And you can watch the Sam Raimi Spider-Man movies, and it's like, this is so Sam Raimi.
Yeah.
It has all of the crazy over-the-top zooms and schmaltz and the crazy slapstick and all that stuff that Sam Raimi does really well. And I think with very few exceptions, there's very few modern superhero movies that make me feel anything aside from, that was fun, that goes in my short-term memory, I'm never going to watch this again. And very few of them am I ever going to watch. I'm never going to watch Doctor Strange again. I'm never going to watch, I don't even think I'm going to watch all of Captain America Civil War again. I think I might watch the airport fight because I want to watch the airport fight. The same way that Doctor Strange really is just the, Doctor Strange is really just the clever way he defeats a god at the end.
Yeah, you use that as your whipping boy as the Marvel movie, the Marvel movie that you don't want to watch again, and I think it's the favorite out of all of them for me.
And here's the weird thing.
But it's to each his own, right? They are, functionally, the Marvel ones at least, are the same movie.
Yeah, this is the
where
thing.
Where things are just jumbled around. Characters are different and things are jumbled around.
Doctor Strange is not bad. Doctor Strange is actually pretty good, but there is so much pretty good.
Yeah.
That I can't feel anything for pretty good anymore because I'm used to this sort of standard. It's like McDonald's. McDonald's is not good hamburgers, but McDonald's sells itself on consistency. that you get the same hamburger at every single location.
Right.
But because of that, you never get anything truly great. And that's a little bit different, though, because you never get that great McDonald's hamburger. You never get, like, I think Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2 is a legitimately great movie that I like watching, because there's an emotional core there that is genuinely powerful, and there's themes, and it's tied together, and I feel the fingerprints of James Gunn. And here's the thing that is going to be really fucking crazy that I think we're going to get some people upset about. I have a weird sort of counter-respect for Batman v Superman that I don't have for a lot of these movies, because it does have artistic fingerprints.
Mm,
yes, it's
true.
It's stupid, and it's dour, and it's pretentious garbage that is clearly written. It feels like it was written by somebody who just took a bunch of, like, philosophy 101 things, and it's just like, devils don't come from below, they come from angels above. I'm going to turn this Renaissance painting of angels and demons upside down. It's like, right. It's like I'm going to look at a broken mirror to see my fractured psyche type shit, and I'm just going to look in sadly into the middle distance, and I'm just, I'm going to be so angry all the time. And it's like, it's awful, but I can tell you this is a work of an artist who has a vision. Quick pop quiz. Who directed, who directed Doctor Strange?
No clue. I don't have any clue.
I don't know.
No idea.
I saw it. How is it that I'm watching something and I don't? And I get, what you really get out of watching a lot of these movies is that you want to hang out with this actor being that character. And some of them do way better than others. Like, for instance, I think Infinity War is remarkable for how much of a not hot mess it is.
Yeah, agreed. Totally agreed.
I mean, I think somebody I once saw, I heard an interview where they referred to it as a party sub, where they said, you're excited to see it. You might not have wanted that, especially for lunch. It's not your favorite thing, but you're never sad when you walk into a room and there's a party sub there with everything. And I'm always happy to see a 9-foot sandwich, was the point they made. That was on Unspooled, which is actually a really good movie podcast. But yeah, I think that's kind of what it is. I'm happy to see it, but I don't take anything with me from it. And I think that the point, which I wanted to say something, and this is the part where I'm genuinely sort of afraid, is that they announced the nominees for Best Picture and Black Panther got a nomination. Now, I have so much respect for that movie as a cultural icon, the fact that it knock down this bullshit idea that nobody wants to see a movie with a black lead or almost an all-black cast. That proved that totally is a lie. That's not true. People do want to see that. People desperately want to see that. People have been waiting to see that for a long time, the same way they felt about Wonder Woman, which is that we've been denied this thing for so long, and it feels so fucking good to see it. Especially in the case of Wonder Woman, in a way where we're not constantly looking up her ass every time she runs into the battle the way that we would in, like, a Tomb Raider movie with Angelina Jolie, where it's basically like, this is all about a camera ogling a person, you know, say, hey, let's look at her ass while she kicks ass. I mean, that's the sort of thing we're used to, and it's so different from that. But here's the thing, and this is something similar to what Kit said when she was on the show about this, is that if you come crawling out of a desert and you're starving and you're dehydrated and somebody hands you a jug of water, it's probably going to taste like the best thing you've ever had. Right. But that doesn't mean that it is, that you're going to have a very different opinion when we exist in a world where we're not denied these things, that we live in a world where you don't have to look very hard to find diverse casting, people of color in prominent places, not just as sidekicks in movies, women being actual characters and not simply plot devices in movies, all of that. That we live in a world where all of this stuff is standard, then I think we're not going to see these things as anything other than the first one through the door. And I think Black Panther is a great movie. It does way more. It has a better villain than most Marvel movies, which is kind of damning praise, but I think Killmonger is a great villain who has more understandable, complex motivations than most Marvel villains. But is it a Best Picture movie? I really don't think it is.
Yeah, I mean, it's and my thoughts about, I mean, I've only seen it once, I haven't rewatched it. My immediate thoughts about it were how impressed I was, how I felt sort of shades of Star Trek The Next Generation in the... This is why I think a lot of people responded to it positively, the idea of Wakanda as a place that is kind of a unique vision of a place that is not, if it's not a utopia, it's pretty fucking close to a utopia. And the type of people who live there are not the type of people who live in a Star Trek The Next Generation utopia, which is full of white people with, like, maybe one brown person in the background or something.
Yeah, and it's not like...
That's, that, to me, I was like, that's big. I felt like a, huh, we're writing a piece that's not, like, just a dystopian mess of melted metal, you know.
Yeah, it's a utopian world that's distinctively African, but it's African minus the colonialism that's
right.
So deeply entrenched in any person of color in this world. Or, I mean, just whether it's us or the Romans or the British or whoever, you know, the French, we've all sort of like stamped it out and said, no, you're gonna have to exist in the mold that we create for culture.
Right.
You're going to have to. So if you do have a lot of diversity, it's because you're having to fit into our mold and succeed despite the disadvantages we put you at. So, I mean, this is a world that is built by African people, and it's better than anything else in the world.
Yeah.
And it's fucking great. And I think the set design, the costume design, the world building is top notch, even though it wasn't necessarily built for the movie. A lot of that was built by a lot of people, whether it was Reginald Hudlund or Jack Kirby or Christopher Priest or a lot of the other people who've created the world of Wakanda in comics. And then I'm not going to downplay the great visual design and stuff that was put into this movie. But is that in itself, that awesome world, enough? Do you have a story there that's amazing? There's a very good story. It's well better than most of the superhero movies that are out.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, and it would still be one that I would show someone, that I would show, recommend if you were to say three movies.
Yeah.
That would be one of the ones that I would recommend that they watch because of those disparate elements that people would assume never having, not watching superhero movies, they'd be like, I don't know, this sort of thing was actually possible.
Yeah.
But it, for me, it, like...
But put against all movies.
I don't know. I mean, I would want people to watch Widows before I would want people to watch Black Panther.
Absolutely.
If you want a story that's about people you don't normally see as heroes in a movie, in a situation that where you have villains and heroes with very complex motivations, and especially a movie, this is probably my biggest thing, especially movies where you don't know what's going to happen.
Yeah.
And my single greatest issue is the how in a Marvel movie you can pretty well guess the A to B to C to D. Actually, you could probably guess the A to D, and the B and C you could be a little squishy on.
Yeah,
that to me says they're not as good of a movie than the kind for which you are being dragged along, enticed along, because you just simply don't know what's going to happen.
Yeah, and I'll just say this, that the fight choreography isn't as great as the best fight choreography that I would want out of that. Like, it's like having the best musical, not having the best dance sequences and the best music.
Sure.
There's a lot of dodgy CGI. I think it's because I don't think Marvel had the same confidence in this with a black lead as they did with Avengers Infinity War.
Sure.
So that's the stuff. It's Ryan Coogler's a great director,
I think
isn't the best Ryan Coogler movie.
His other, you know, the Fruitvale Station and stuff are just ridiculously amazing.
I mean, I would have even put Creed as a Best Picture nominee above this.
Yeah, I would too.
I think that's a much better piece. But I mean, there's, if you want to have something that, you want to have the movie that sort of symbolizes this time and saying, this is incredible, and this is something that has like a black lead in it. There is another movie that's up for Best Picture, which is Black Klansman, which was fucking incredible.
Yeah.
And again, Black Panther is great when I compare it to other comparable superhero movies, but Black Klansman knocked me on my fucking ass. And if Spike Lee does not win Best Director, I will fucking hit somebody.
Yeah. There was a lot of stuff that was really impressive. And yeah. But maybe I'm not wrong in saying, well, for this generation of, if you were to hold up one of the dozens of this sort of cycle of superhero movies, Black Panther should be that one for all of those reasons and for other reasons. Like, yeah, I it totally gets there. I'd be hard pressed to say. I mean, the second Captain America movie was really good, and it holds up watching it after watching it a couple times.
But I wouldn't put that up for Best Picture either.
No, I wouldn't put that up for Best Picture. Yeah.
I wouldn't put most of the... there's only, I think, one, maybe two superhero movies that I would have ever put up for Best Picture. I think Superman the movie, because, again, it was first, in the same way that Star Wars was nominated for Best Picture, but, like, Empire wasn't.
Right.
But I think Superman the movie, but even then, I don't think it deserved to win. And the other one is Logan.
Yeah.
I think sure. Logan is a movie that deserves a nomination, but not a win. I think that the one that did win that year, I think, was Shape of Water.
Okay.
There were like three movies.
That's fine by me.
Whether it was Shape of Water or Three Billboards or anything, those are the movies that I felt something. I genuinely felt something. And like Black Klansman this year, that movie made me laugh. It made me tear up. It shocked me. It frightened me.
Yeah.
It made me think. It really took me on an emotional ride that there are moments in Black Panther that are good, but don't quite land in the way that I want them to, and they want them to. And that's not all Ryan Coogler's fault. I mean, there's obviously a lot more cooks in the kitchen when you're dealing with an established property, maybe less with Black Panther because than, say, Captain America or Iron Man, because the money people are going to be way more touchy with that shit. But
that's true.
But that's the thing is that, you know, again, with Logan, Logan is a movie that when you rewatch it, it knocks you on your fucking ass because it's not only a comment on superhero movies and nostalgia and stuff, but it does that thing you mentioned where I don't know where it's going.
Yeah.
And it also does a thing that I'm afraid that most superhero movies don't do, which is that one of the most important things of any story is an ending. And it doesn't feel like we get endings anymore.
Right.
It feels like everything will go into the next thing and that we never get a moment where you're like, okay, that's the end. And Logan is one of the few superhero movies that I've seen where we finally get a definitive ending of something. The only other series I can think of does that of superheroes is the Nolan Batman trilogy that has a definitive ending. Like, this is the last Batman story.
Right.
And of course they're going to reboot him, but when do we get that ending? Most of the time we do what we used to do with TV shows back in the day, which is that we just keep going until they decide to not make a new one.
Right.
That in the original Star Trek, we didn't get a last episode. The last shot is just the Enterprise going around the planet or pulling off into space the same way it does in every other episode.
Right.
And you don't know if there's going to be something else. Having an ending is something I think we've lost and I'd like to reclaim.
And the majority of films that would be nominated for any of the Oscars and really the majority of movies in general are those types of movies, beginning, middle, end. Not likely that you're going to see these characters ever again. Most movies are like this.
Yeah.
The majority of them are.
And sequels are pretty rare up there. I mean, it's not like a Godfather Part 2 or something.
You can get Mamma Mia 2, right? This does happen. But outside of superhero movies, it doesn't happen all that often. You'll get the same crew of people doing, you know, the same actors or the same writers doing something over again. But it's just the idea that it's one continuous, never-ending story with characters that are dropping in and out, it's a pretty new thing. It's a fairly new thing.
But
maybe the problem is that it's apples and oranges. Is that putting Logan next to, well, forget Logan, because Logan I think is also just a legitimately good movie. Putting Black Panther or putting Avengers of Infinity War up next to a Widows or something doesn't serve either of them because they're a different type of storytelling.
I would have put Widows in Black Panther's spot. Or there's another movie I haven't seen, but I've heard it's just incredible this year. Sorry to Bother You.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
I've heard nothing but good things about that.
It has a very similar premise to Black Klansman, actually, about the white guy voice.
The white guy voice.
As being the entrance to another world, basically.
And yeah. I love that these things are challenging things. That was the thing that I got last year, which is the movies that were up for Best Picture, or even Best Director, where it was like Greta Gerwig, Guillermo del Toro, and Jordan Peele. I legitimately wanted all three of them to win.
Yeah.
Legitimately earned that, where I'm like, holy shit, these are great. Get Out is amazing. Lady Bird was great. I mean, where it's like, who do I have the least in common with than like a 13-year-old girl? Or it's like a high school kid. I don't have anything, but it's like I felt those emotions. I got in depth. It's like the direction was incredible. The performances were amazing. I want to feel things when I see movies, and when I do, it feels like it's such a rare occurrence these days that a lot of movies I enjoy. They're good. They're competent. And occasionally I feel something. Like, I teared up when Thanos disintegrated Peter Parker. Yeah. I'm like,
that was sad.
That was really fucking sad. But again, it's not the same as a movie that does that throughout. I mean, Logan is legitimately sad. Actually, the last movie I think was like a legit great superhero movie I saw was Into the Spider-Verse.
Yeah. That would have been the only thing I would have added there. And I think...
I'd say I'd give that a spot from Black Panther because it's doing more risky things.
It's doing the similar things, but it's also elevating a particular genre of the film medium in a way that I don't think I've never seen it before.
I mean, again, that's the power of Lord and Millard. They did the same thing with a Lego movie, which is that you take something which on its face you're like, oh, it sounds like they're going to fuck that up. And they talk about this thing as a cultural icon. They step back and they talk about Spider-Man as a cultural piece of the fabric of the things that we enjoy, that he's a theme song and a popsicle and, right. You know, the idea anyone can wear the mask. It can be Nicolas Cage or it can be a schlubby guy in, you know, his late 30s. It can be a black kid. It can be a talking pig. It's like, it can be all of these things. And it's sort of about, you know, it has this heart to it. And also the amazing animation, which is the first time I've seen a superhero movie that really challenges, I mean, animated, because normally they're serviceable or actually very good sometimes, but I've never seen it where it felt like it was an achievement in the same way that Disney or Pixar does it.
Yeah, so let me tell you about the idea of animation, which is this is something that this is a deeply held desire of mine that maybe I've told you a few times, which is I love animation as a film medium probably more than I like actual film. And even though, like, I can recognize in the same way that superhero movies have come to sort of the formula has come to dominate making a certain stripe of movie that we talk about an awful lot, this sort of Pixar, as wonderful of things that Pixar has made, they've also kind of flattened animated films to a degree where, to me, very few of them have any real life or personality, even though, like, tens of thousands of people who are incredibly creative, who spend, you know, millions of person hours in their lives putting them together, they're amazing for that fact. But when I see one Into the Spider-Verse that's not this, like, meticulously constructed 3D thing with a song in the middle or whatever, where the characters are all one note, two-dimensional, and they've got the same hero's journey arc that everyone else does, and I see Into the Spider-Verse and I think, holy shit, this is what the medium can do. But you can make Minions movies till the end of time and they're still going to make money. I'd much rather see what animation can do in the direction of Into the Spider-Verse than what Pixar has done to it. And I think that's probably as significant, not just to the medium of animation, superhero movies as a genre and representation of characters than anything that was released last year.
Because we can have all of these things. All of these things can be in there. And that's the thing I loved about Spider-Verse is it made Miles a very three-dimensional character that you love this kid. And you love his world.
And you see how the world around him is real instead of just, say, a backdrop for exposition.
And then you have the relationship between him and his uncle and his dad and the revelations that come out of that. And you're like, and not only that, it's a movie that when you go back, having rewatched it, I've seen it three times in the theater. I haven't done that in a long time.
Wow.
And it's a movie that the pieces of how things work and how it fits together are so well constructed. Like, okay, I'm going to spoil Into the Spider-Verse real quickly.
Okay.
Miles's uncle, who he has a closer relationship with than his dad is much more of a by the book cop kind of guy who can be a little bit of a killjoy sometimes, and his uncle's a bit more laid back. He's got a cool apartment, and he's the one that Miles confides in. He's the one that he kind of unloads and just says, I'm feeling upset or stuff like that, where he kind of feels like his dad puts pressure on him, and that's kind of the push and pull where you wonder, kind of, does his uncle enable him a little too much,
right?
And it's always those sorts of questions. And his uncle is the person who takes him to the underground subway area where he gets bitten by the spider that gives him the powers. And his uncle's the one who goes, hey, I know a place. And you're like, well, that's a weird coincidence. And he took him to the place. But it's not. Why does his uncle know where that underground lair that happens to be right next to where Kingpin's lab is?
Right.
Because he's the Prowler. He knows that place because he rides his motorcycle out of there when he's going to be this scary villain working for a bad guy. And he's like, hey, I know a place that would be really cool. It's all of this stuff feels, it comes together really, really well. And what I love is instead of him denouncing his uncle or finding out his uncle's a bad person, is it never resolves the question of why he worked for the Kingpin or how he got involved in this. But he's still his uncle. It's not like I'm a bad person. At the minute he sees that this new Spider-Man is Miles, he stops. And he looks terrified because he knows what the implications of not killing this kid are.
Yeah.
He knows that he's dead. And he's allowed to have this complicated memory of his uncle that he still loves and still does a mural of him at the end.
Right.
And he still loves this person knowing that he had a complicated life. And that's something that most of these movies don't allow anyone to have. And also the animation in this movie is spectacular.
Yeah. I'm shocked by how sort of fractally intriguing of an idea it is. No matter which facet you zoom in on, there are things about it, even down to, I was seeing a breakdown of the way they did the motion blur. Mm-hmm. So there's a very specifically strange combination of techniques where they animate the different keyframes in between. And some of it sort of looks like it's color separated for 3D.
Yes.
Which it isn't. It's really strange.
But that's how they do out of focus.
And then some of it seems jerky, like they just decided not to animate in between. And then some of it was motion blur that makes it look like they're real characters being filmed with a camera, but the motion blur was, of course, totally made up. And all of these ideas about how you not only that, but this is combined with the fact that there are ways in which they try to make certain scenes look like comic book panels.
Yes, there's thought bubbles in this movie. There's sound effects on screen in this movie. Yeah. There's captions in this movie, and it embraces its origins. That it says, and they also skip past the origin of all these other Spider-Men super fast. And what I really love is that they all have that quick 10-second, this is who I am, this is what I do,
right.
And it all done in their specific animation style, because, you know, what I love about, say, Peter Porker's Spider-Ham is that he's animated with the physics of a Looney Tunes character,
right.
And he's done in 2D animation when everything around him is 3D.
Yeah.
Or that Nicolas Cage's Spider-Man Noir is in black and white. And the fact that there are things that are artistic flourishes that you don't do in live action, and it sort of embraces the comic bookiness of it. And also allows, you know, both with the choice of music and the choice of just artistic flourishes, to do some really interesting things. There's the fingerprints of artists that are making specific decisions that aren't just about saying, how do we make this as universal as possible? And it's great.
Yeah.
I'm thrilled that my favorite superhero is the one that gets this treatment.
Yeah.
But, I mean, I would be thrilled if this any fictional character got treated this way and said, hey, let's do something amazing with them that challenges what we normally do in a movie like this. Because I saw The Incredibles 2 this year. I don't remember almost anything from that other than Bob Odenkirk being in it. And it's good.
Yeah.
But it went into that same short-term memory hole that a lot of Marvel films do, where I'm never going to rewatch that one again. I'm going to rewatch the first one. I think that Pixar is kind of, for a lot of their movies, fallen down that same memory hole.
Yeah.
Where these things are good and even have a couple heartfelt moments. But for the most part, it kind of feels like this is a movie made by producers rather than by directors and writers and actors.
So here's the question, if I'm just sort of trying to draw up what we're talking about, is you're in this, you're trying to clear yourself out of your basement, you're tired of not feeling something from the sort of malaise of superhero movies. I mean, do you feel like you're going to be, just because of your AMC Plus subscription, do you think you're just going to pull yourself to each and every one of them as they come out just because you feel obligated to? Or are you going to try to block them out and favor something else over watching them?
Well, I don't think I have to choose an or. I think I can do an and, which is I want more of that and, that other second group, that stuff that makes me feel. I want to make more of an effort to go see those movies where I do feel something and I'm surprised and I'm shocked and I'm elated and I'm thrilled. And I want to go through that emotional roller coaster rather than one that just goes really, really fast, mostly in a straight line with a couple dips. because I want to feel stuff again. I'm probably still going to see it. Like Aquaman came out.
Yeah, which I haven't seen.
It's fine.
Yeah.
I mean, there's a really cool scene with an octopus playing the drums, and you get to see an armored Dolph Lundgren riding a giant seahorse.
Okay.
I'm on board for both of those things. I love that it sort of embraces the Silver Age-y elements of Aquaman, who's another favorite. He's definitely a character who is very strange. It's a movie that it feels like they clearly thought they weren't getting a second Aquaman movie, so let's just put all of the Aquaman in this movie.
That's awesome.
And
but I hear it's sort of a mess as well.
It's kind of a mess. It's kind of overstuffed. I think they should have stuck to just Black Manta, who has a much clearer motivation as a bad guy, is much more tied into a character arc from Aquaman. The neatest bits are them fighting, you know, him in, like, I believe it's like Italy or something like that. It's definitely somewhere on the Mediterranean. And there's this scene where Aquaman and Mira, who's from Atlantis, that's his love interest. Mm-hmm. She's never been, she just thinks the surface world is shit. And she sees this village that actually looks kind of nice and bucolic. And she starts to go, oh, maybe the surface world isn't so bad. And someone hands her a bouquet of roses. And she's like, oh, and she doesn't know what it is. And she eats a rose. And Aquaman's like, ah. And she hands it to him, and he just kind of shrugs and eats a rose. And that thing with Aquaman shrugging and just eating one of the roses, too, and go, eh, I'm going to go with it, is probably my favorite moment in that entire movie, and I wanted more of that. Because that was the stuff that was kind of surprising. It was very overstuffed, and for the most part, it was good. It was fine. There were only a few moments that I'd say were bad. But it felt like it's like we've lowered the bar so much because Batman versus Superman is so fucking miserable of a movie and a viewing experience. As our friend Joe Preddy says, it feels like it was shot through a filter of sewer water. Where it's just so fucking miserable and pretentious and stupid. In a weird sort of way, I have more respect for Batman v Superman than I do, because it's clearly going like, yeah, I'm going to be a super aggro dude bro philosopher who makes a movie that is exactly the way I want it to be. And it's just all about how all adult feelings are so dark, and I'm just going to stare into the middle distance. And just, it's so trying hard to be taken seriously.
Right.
But again, it here's the thing. And I hate Batman v Superman, but I'm still talking about it. How many years later?
It's true. To wrap this up, I mean, I think I'm on board and my thoughts about superhero movies have certainly changed for the better, I would say. I'd say if I were to take probably the biggest thing, I mean, I care about having lots of more movies and more movies that are from more places in the world and more different types of people. If everything to be produced just from the center of the 10-mile zone of Hollywood probably makes for some pretty bland ideas. So I want more people to see movies from around the world. I also am just happy if people go out to see movies in theaters. And one thing that you can certainly say about the supremacy of superhero movies is that people are going out to go see these movies in theaters. Mm-hmm. And there's a premium on that. And I wish people would go and see more different types of movies in theaters. So I give them credit for that. And overall, my emotional investment in a set of very, very cynically constructed and arranged comic book characters as being thrust into this medium is got pretty good. Like my emotional investment is pretty substantial for something that I like. You know, I think I just recently I tried to read the new run on Captain America. Ta-Nehisi Coates was, after doing Black Panther, was like, okay, we're going to do the Captain America. I lasted two issues. Like, I can't pick up the pages and get the bug to watch or to read like these characters in any other medium. So in that sense, like, if I'm getting these sort of not in a second hand, but in a third or fourth hand, which is, I'm assuming when they get to the movies, they've been strained in weird ways, and I still like them, I think that's probably good. But I'm going to watch 20 other different types of movies to every one Disney, Marvel, Star Wars movie. You know, that's just me. That's me.
I think I'm at the point now.
I've got a more healthy diet of movies. So for me, it's not like a self-care thing to stop watching and talking about these movies.
I don't think I'm going to stop, but I think what I want to do is stop talking about it on this show.
Okay. I'll agree to stop talking about it with you.
It's hard to not talk about it and just bitch about it, because it just feels...
Especially because our guests also want to talk about it, too.
I know.
More often than
they're
not.
They're not on every episode, but it's like fucking Groundhog Day. Ned Ryerson! Except it's like Ant-Man. Bing!
Steven Tobolowsky sounds a lot like Wallace Shawn, by the way. I think you could probably do a great Wallace Shawn.
Oh, okay. Oh, I don't even know.
Never underestimate a Sicilian.
What, not when death is on the line! But, Yeah, I think I can. I think I can do that pretty well. But yeah, I think what I want more than anything else is I want to have it where we're excited about creators rather than just creations.
Agreed.
That it's not exciting because I know these characters. I want it to be exciting because I like the people who make these movies. Like the dudes that make the John Wick movies, and I'm Chad's...
Stahelski?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, I get excited about that guy making a movie. If he makes another post-John Wick movie, I'm on fucking board.
Yeah.
Jordan Peele makes another movie, I'm on fucking board.
Yeah.
I'm there. I want to like creators and again, like, the fact that Jordan Peele wants to do the Twilight Zone. Is going to be doing the Twilight sure. Zone. That I think that's what the Twilight Zone needs. It doesn't need a writer's room. It needs a specific vision, because that's what made the Rod Serling Twilight show special. Yep. Is it was like, this is the vision of one man. We just change who that man is. Find someone with a similar sort of interesting, socially conscious mentality and an artistic flair. And I think Jordan Peele is that guy. I mean, in a lot of ways, you could say Get Out could be a Twilight Zone movie.
Sure, absolutely.
I mean, yeah. It's great, and just have him come out in a suit and do his thing and introduce the story that he wrote and directed.
That stuff, I'm totally happy about. I think some people might say, well, oh, there's already been. It's called Black Mirror. Although Black Mirror is also
an artistic thing.
It's so cynical. I'm like, I can't take it. I just can't take it.
I heard somebody say that the what is every Black Mirror episode? You look up and go, ah, and it's that diamond from The Sims above your head. Oh, fuck! I'm in an evil computer. But yeah, I actually have not seen a lot of Black Mirror, but I'm happier by Black Mirror being a big thing than I am by most franchises.
Sure.
Because
sure.
It means that every time the beauty of an anthology is that people create new stories.
Yeah.
And I want to see new stories that have endings.
Agreed. That is the through line here, is I just want to see new stories with endings as well. And if there are a broader range of people telling those stories, as opposed to just Bob Orsi's and Alex Kurtzman's, you know, like...
I'm on board!
Yeah, please. More
please.
Of those.
I think I got it all out of the basement.
I'll just stuff it in the corner of my basement for you.
Yeah, you can just shove it down there.
Duct tape around.
Yeah, throw it in a river.
Yeah. All right, we did some good work here, Mike.
I do. I feel like I've grown. I feel like
his
feel like
heart
I'm in a better
grown
place.
Three sizes.
Oh.
Radio vs. the Martians is hosted by Mike Gillis and Casey Doran. This podcast is recorded in beautiful Valverde in Seattle, Washington. Our chief engineer is Casey Dorn, and our editor is Mike Gillis. Our original theme music is written and performed by James Wetzel. Special thanks to Sam Mulvey, Rob Kelly, James Wetzel, Paul Rue, Tobiah Panshin, Scott Kramer, Kyle Hepworth, and Todd Maxfield Matsumoto. Please take the time to rate and review our show on iTunes and Stitcher, and follow us on Facebook and Twitter. And if you'd like to support the show financially, please consider becoming one of our Patreon subscribers. Even just $1 a month gives you access to exclusive episodes. And you can always find us online at radioversusthemartians.com.
My name is Peter Parker. In my universe, it's 1933, and I'm a private eye. I like to drink egg creams, and I like to fight Nazis. A lot. Sometimes I let matches burn down to my fingertips just to feel something, anything. Oh.